Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. I am Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
And this is episode number 141. We will be talking about the Red Pyramid, chapters 35 and 36. And we took a little bit of a week off.
Yes.
Because were we both traveling? Or was it just me?
You were traveling.
Yeah.
I'm traveling next week. There's right. a little bit of chaos. So I think we just decided we'll push it 1 week.
Yeah. But we are back. I am back from New Orleans. It was one of the best trips I've ever been on.
It's such a great city
to visit. It really is.
And I went as like a teenager, so I didn't really get to enjoy it.
I was going to say, especially if you like drinking. Because,
oh, yeah.
My God. We got home, and we were just like eating dinner a day or two later. And I was like, do I want to drink right now? Because we drank every night there. And like normally during the week, like I don't drink at all. Sometimes right. I'll drink on the weekend. If we go out, I'll drink, like have a drink or something. But like we drink every night there. And I came back and I was like, I have such an urge to drink right now. And I really don't need to be doing that. But it was, yeah, it was really fantastic. We did go to Jackson Square. I know that was your...
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. It was like... Honestly, it was kind of barren. There was nothing really going on. And the cathedral was like kind of in the middle of getting repaired or like cleaned up.
Okay.
And so it was looking a little rough. And there was just like nobody there, nothing going on. But we went like during the day. So like I'm sure at night, I think we walked through there at night one night and there was like more people out and stuff.
Yeah.
But... I did post some pictures on my personal account if anybody wants to see it, but we went to the World War II Museum, which was fantastic. If you plan to go there, plan for the whole day, because we were there for 4 hours and we literally had to like book it through it just to like actually get through all three buildings.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very well done museum. We went on a ghost walking tour at night, which was very cool.
It's a very ghost-rich town. There's a lot of stories and
And it was, we had a great guide and it was just cool learning the history and stuff like that. What else did we do? Went on a swamp tour. So we were out in a boat with a whole bunch of alligators.
Ooh.
And yeah, it was awesome.
Definitely didn't get to do anything like that. That would be
That was
crazy.
Our favorite thing. It was really great. Went to the aquarium, which also had an insectarium. Kind of expensive for the size of it, but we got discounted zoo tickets.
Nice.
Which did help. Their zoo is probably, like, aesthetically, the most beautiful zoo I've ever been to.
Wow.
Very well designed. A little bit smaller than I expected, but, like, really good. We met up with Courtney there.
If you guys listen
to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, you'll know who Courtney is. Haven't seen her in a few years.
I was going to say, it's been
right before COVID, so it's been, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
So it was really great to kind of catch up with her. And, gosh, what else did we do? I know there were some other things. Ate a lot of food.
It's another very food-rich city. There's just so much yummy-smelling, yummy-tasting things to try. And all the different drinks. Because, like, mojitos are big down there. Hurricanes are big down there. Like,
hurricanes are everywhere.
Yeah. Like, there's so many options and so many things to try. And, yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Such a fun place.
Kevin had never been there, so I was like... And I don't know the city very well. I'd only been once for, like, a day with Courtney. Like, I think it was in like 2017 or something. It was like quite a while ago, maybe even 2015. I don't remember. But so like I didn't really know exactly where to go, but I did some research. I knew like the kinds of things we wanted to do, and I wanted him to try a whole bunch of different kinds of food, and it was just great like experiencing that. He had a great time too. We're like, we'll definitely go back and then try to maybe stay somewhere else, because we were like right in the French Quarter. Which is fine, but, like, Bourbon Street is not really my jam.
And it is right there.
Like, yeah.
I think I stayed at the same Marriott, hotel you stayed at, because I kind of ran through it in my head, and I'm like, we stayed at a Marriott, like, right near Bourbon Street. So if you are where I think, if you stayed where I think you stayed, yeah, Bourbon Street is, like, almost right outside the door, and it is just loud and insane.
Yeah, I think it was, like, a couple streets down, but, like, even just the traffic, like, the foot traffic on Canal, which is another major street, there's just a lot of people, and, you know, very loud. The music is blasting a lot. I sound like such an old person. we went to several bars, because I met up with my co-writer and a bunch of people from the team. And that was fantastic. Like, we went, did I even mention, I went there for BoucherCon, which now I know how to pronounce it, which is a mystery thrillers readers and writers convention. So they had panels for readers who love these authors and just want to hear them speak. And a lot of, there's a lot of crossover, obviously, with people who love to read these books and also want to write. And so they had some informative panels. And it was this great mix of, like, I would go to a couple of panels, usually in the morning, and then we'd go out on an adventure in the afternoon and stuff. But my co-writer, who is, like, he's older than me, he found the loudest bar in every, on every single street we went to. And Kevin and I are like, it's so loud in here. And I was like, God, we are so old. Like, I was like, I'm tired. It's loud. There's too many people. But it was still fun, and we got to, like, see a couple of really interesting, unique bars and stuff like that. So, awesome. It was a great time, and I would like to go back at some point.
Alex and I seem to have great success when we travel if we plan one event on a boat. It seems to go very well for us. The whale watching was our favorite part of Maine, and then when we did the fireworks boat for Chicago, like, that was amazing. Like, that was so much fun. So yeah, I am a big fan of the boat thing. Apparently it just makes a trip. I don't know if it's just because it's just so different from, like, the planes. Like, we're not boat people. Like, yes, there are lakes and people have boats, but, like, unless you're pretty well off, you don't own a boat, and so you don't really think about, like, getting out on the lake all the
time. And also, a lake is so different from either the ocean and, like, the swamp. The swamp is such a cool, interesting place, and there were, I thought we were supposed to see it, but, like, there's literally a tree there that inspired the tree in Princess and the Frog.
Oh, cool.
And I thought we were going to go see it, and they were like, it's so iconic, you'll, like, recognize it immediately. And then we didn't see it, and I was very disappointed. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a really unique landscape. Also, I have to say, I feel like everyone should be very proud of me because, I don't know if I've mentioned this on here before, I hate grasshoppers and crickets. Cover me in spiders any day over a single grasshopper.
This is why Karen and I worked as roommates. Yes. I took care of moths and grasshoppers, and she handled all the spiders and, like, the earwigs and stuff that I could not handle.
yeah, I really, really hate them. And I wasn't entirely sure. We went to Cincinnati, and there was an insectarium that we went to there as well. And I didn't know if Kevin truly understood how afraid I am of grasshoppers until we went and saw, like, the big ones, like the locusts that are, like, several inches long. And I was like, look at my arm. All of my hairs were standing on end because I was so creeped out.
Yeah.
This is why you should be proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
On the swamp tour, he turned the boat and like, edged right up to this tree and captured two katydids. I think that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what they are, they look like grasshoppers on steroids. They are, I almost swore, they are very large. They're effing huge. I have a picture that I will post. I haven't posted it yet. Kevin's holding it, and it's gigantic. I was so chill.
Nice.
I was so proud of myself. Now, if it had jumped on me, I probably would have freaked out.
Fallen out of the boat.
Yes, which would have been very bad.
Very
Although,
bad.
Although there were no alligators around at that time. But, yeah, I was very proud of myself for not completely losing it. But, yeah, they are huge.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a really, really good time. And can't wait to go back. And that's pretty much what I've been doing since the last time is relaxing and getting ready for that trip. And now it's done and over with.
Yeah, which is always sad, but
it is. But we're going to go to Mexico in November.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, for, like, kind of a co-birthday celebration. I'm also kind of turning it into my 5 years as a published author with my name on the book kind of thing.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that yet, but that's what I'm doing. but, yeah, so have that to look forward to at least.
Yeah, that's awesome. I pretty much have done nothing. We were supposed to go and
see... Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's not a terrible thing.
Okay.
We were supposed to go and see the SNL exhibit at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
We did not end up making it over there. Alex had some just, like, family stuff that was kind of going on at the time, and he didn't really want to, like, drive all the way to Cleveland and just kind of, you know, one of those things where you just have are kind of in a bad headspace and you're like, I don't want to spend a lot of time at this thing that I want to love and, like, not have the time to really appreciate it or not be in the right mindset.
I get that. That is unfortunate, though, because I know he really wanted to see that.
Yeah, but as far as we could tell, it's supposed to be there through 2025, like, through the end of the year.
Okay.
So we think we have plenty of time to go.
That's good.
And he has a friend that lives in Cleveland, so, like, meeting up with her is kind of part of the deal, too, and she was, like, totally fine. So we didn't end up making it to the SNL exhibit yet, but it is hopefully going to be a day trip in the books sometime in October or November. We'll pick a weekend and just kind of be like, let's do it. So hopefully we will do that. But yeah, so we ended up with that Saturday off and just kind of relaxed, which was nice because we basically every weekend in September is just something. Yesterday we had a bridal shower. It's kind of a couple shower for a friend of my husband's. And then we have a wedding, or we're going out of town next weekend. We have a wedding the following weekend, someone from my church. And then it's my birthday.
Yeah.
Which is like, whoa. we're there. And then
it's like, so close.
It's like from mid-August through the 1st of October, like, we've just got stuff. And it's just like every weekend is something going on in it. Yeah. So it was like, you know what? It's okay that one of our plans just kind of fell through at the last minute. Like, we probably need the time to just kind of be our introverted selves and stay home and soak up the quiet.
Yeah.
but yeah, but I've gotten to spend plenty of time with my new niece and basically just make faces at her while my mom holds her because she's so cute. Today, I probably spent at least a quarter of the game just making faces at her. She is 2.5 months old now.
Time flies.
Yes. And she is just the cutest thing. She eats like a champ.
Nice.
Is getting better at sleeping, but sleeps at night, not during the day. Like, she does not nap at all. At least not willingly.
Yeah.
They try and get her down. They rock her to sleep or whatever, but, like, she fights it at every turn. There's just so many cooler things she'd rather be doing. But yeah, no, she's absolutely adorable, and, I'm loving that. Today I was the bigger person, and I turned down the opportunity to hold her so that my dad could hold her for some time, and then she got really cranky, and they needed to go put her down in the, playpen thing, so I didn't really get a chance to hold her, and I won't get to hold her next week, because I'll be traveling, but that following week, I'm taking my turn.
Yes.
Yeah. It's time.
There's plenty of time.
I know. It's just, I love my baby fix.
Yeah.
I don't want any of my own, so I just need to soak up all I can get from the people around me.
Samesies.
I like other people's kids. Love them. Totally. But yeah, that's pretty much been it for me. Just keeping it real chill.
Yeah, that's good. I'm looking forward to kind of getting back and relaxing a bit. The cool thing about BoucherCon is it was very inspiring. Like, there were some panels on writer's block and, like, sticking to routines. And, like, the biggest takeaway I had from that was it doesn't matter how many books you've published or how long you've been an author, everybody struggles with the same thing, literally. And they were all up there, like, every time I read through my first draft, like, I hate it, and then I read through it again, and I think it's great, and I'm like, wow, that happens to me literally every time. Like, Kevin has gotten into the habit of just laughing at me and being like, you hate it now, but when you go back and read it, you're gonna like it. And I've started to finally let that sink in, but so now I'm like, cool, it just kind of gave me a little bit more motivation and energy to, like, figure out where I want to go next in my career and, like, try to get things more organized and stuff and maybe tackle some, like, new different things, so...
And fight off that imposter syndrome.
Yes. Oh, maybe everybody else needs to hear this, too. Somebody from the audience said that they heard this quote from another author at another convention, and they said, imposters don't feel imposter syndrome. Which is true.
It's true. They're so, gleefully trying to, you know, misdirect everyone all the time.
Yeah. 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 So if you ever feel like an imposter, just know you're not. And, like, that honestly has shifted my mindset a bit. Like,
that is definitely something to think about.
Yeah, it was pretty great. So, and now I'm like, oh, I want to go to more writing conventions, and, like, so now I'm looking into other things to do.
Yeah, heck yeah. So,
hopefully we'll be able to do that. But enough of that.
Right.
If you guys want to talk to us about traveling, about New Orleans, about conventions, reading, writing, football games, babies, I guess, Percy Jackson, you can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And now it's time to get into our news and updates.
Yes. Okay, so not a whole lot on the news front right now. We had a big burst of information from both Comic-Con and just kind of all the stuff coming out about Season 3 with the renewal and all of that. But we kind of settled into another nothing burger session where we wait for Season 2 to come out. The build-up to that, we'll probably get some more promos and a few little, like, teaser trailers and stuff. So I'm keeping an eye out for those. But
the show is 3 months away.
I know. It's getting closer.
That's wild.
Closer and closer every day.
Yeah.
But I did want to talk about casting just a little bit. I know you guys probably saw on our Insta, Karen asked something, but we will get to that in just a minute. First of all, I wanted to talk, did everyone know that Kronos had been cast? Now, I don't necessarily 100% know and believe that this will be the actor playing Kronos when he physically does, but in the final episode of Season 1, they actually credited someone with playing Kronos.
I feel like we
just the voice.
Talked about
Did
this.
We talk about this?
Because I think we also noticed it in the credits.
Okay.
But that was a long time ago, so...
Yes. His name is Nick Burain. He has been doing the creepy, raspy voice that's in Percy's Nightmares. Mm-hmm. And he is credited as voice in Dream up until episode 8 of season 1.
Okay.
And that's when they finally credit him as Kronos. So I'm curious if this guy will be playing Kronos physically when we get to that point. It's just one of those things that's kind of keep it in mind. Maybe we'll start seeing him visually as Kronos too. He has done episodes of NCIS. He was in Black Sails. Like, he's kind of in the periphery of John Steinberg and, like,
yeah. I was gonna say the Black Sails thing.
Yeah, he's connected. but yeah, so I thought it was worth pointing out again that we do actually kind of maybe have Kronos already cast. And I mean, that's still a little ways down the line before we'd see him, but worth noting. I also just kind of doing a little bit of research, looking for some other possibly cast members that they snuck in that we didn't notice. When you're looking at the season one, like, cast, there is someone credited as just Sarah. The actress's name is Threnody Sy. I do not, it's, any image I could find of her as the character, she basically just looked like a camper. But they've named her as Sarah. So I thought it was worth just kind of mentioning in case she became an additional character. Like, if they needed a point of view from a camper and maybe they kind of established her as a named character early so that they could go back to her in the future.
Right.
No idea. But I just thought, again, it was worth kind of mentioning, throwing out there in case we need it later. So last time we did talk about Daphne Keene and Sarah Chaudhry being added to the cast. So we were trying to think about who still needs to be cast. And so Karen was lovely and threw a question out to you guys on Insta, and we did get two replies, so I wanted to make sure to mention you guys. From GrizzlyMike718, he answered, as far as characters that should be cast, he says, Apollo, Dr. Thorne, and Atlas are the main three who need to be cast still, with a few one-off episode characters still to be announced as well. Hank, Chuck, and Narius, to name a few, and maybe an announcement for who will be voicing Blackjack? Hmm. Maybe? So, that did kind of stir in me. Like, I wonder if they will have, like, a big name voicing Blackjack? Like, he is kind of one of the more important, like, animal characters. Yeah. And since Percy's the only one who can hear him, like, I'm curious how they'll kind of work with that.
Could be a really interesting way to cast somebody like, oh man, you know what? Alan Tudyk. That's who I want it to be.
I mean, it's always...
You have to pick Alan Tudyk. Of course you do.
And I mean, I'm pretty sure at this point Disney just has him on retainer and they're just like, hey, we need you to voice this animal character. And Blackjack has so much personality. Alan Tudyk would do an amazing job.
I no longer want anybody else to do it.
I mean, I'm totally down with that. Disney, are you listening? You know, we did your work for you. Here you go. I'm assuming they will be casting Apollo. I don't know if you can get through the entire season 3 without Apollo. Like,
that's what I was just, because I was like, oh yeah, I remember the chariot scene where Thalia gets to drive it. Like, yes. I remember that part, but then I don't remember how much he's in the rest of it, and I am curious, like, if he's a big enough component.
Like, it's kind of touch and go. If they needed to write him out, they probably could. Like, they could give him an attendant or something that the kids, you know, have to deal with for some reason or another if they don't want to commit to an actor for Apollo for the rest of the series.
I was gonna say, it kind of looks like Apollo's job is sort of to, like, guide them, like, nudge them in the right direction, and I wouldn't be surprised if they just chose to do it with Hermes instead.
Possibly.
Because it's a little more convenient, keeps them tied into the story a little bit more. Don't think it's... I mean, the chariot scene would be really cool, but I don't think it's, like, 100% necessary to have that in there at this point.
Yeah. We also have Dr. Thorne and Atlas.
Mm.
Atlas, I mean, is an obvious one.
Yeah, that one...
will definitely need a cast. A big, you know, probably a pretty big casting announcement, because they're a pretty important character.
Mm.
Honestly, I don't know if I have any, like, dream casts for Atlas.
I do.
Oh,
I
yeah?
forget his name right now, but Jack Reacher. Just because that man is so beautiful.
I mean,
and large, and I just like him. So that's my pick.
He is delightful. Why can't I think of his name?
Richie?
I know his name. Alan Richson.
There we go. We got there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I needed the assist on that one.
Yeah.
Yes, Alan Richson is a fantastic actor.
Love
him as Reacher.
Yeah.
Absolutely would be a fun, interesting... Atlas is kind of a tortured character, so
yeah,
and like Reacher definitely has some darkness, but like he also plays Reacher as like very brusque and, you know, very man of very few words. So it would be interesting to see him take on Atlas.
I think he could do it. I think either way, you just need somebody kind of big and stoic.
Yeah.
And I think Atlas is a bit of a tortured's probably a good word. I remember him being kind of a jerk. Like, he's not.
He's not, like, a great guy.
Yeah.
But he's kind of been through it.
He tricks,
Annabeth?
He tricks Annabeth into holding up the world, so...
Which, yeah. Yeah. So it's not...
If he's gonna do that to a 13-year-old kid...
Ellen could do smarmy. Like,
yeah.
He could definitely do that kind of...
He's definitely smarmy in Reacher sometimes.
Oh, he played Aquaman on Smallville, like, and we're talking... green and orange suit Aquaman. We're not talking Jason Momoa, I'm a shiny badass Aquaman. Like, no, he was like orange and green suit, and he played it pretty smarmy, like, not gonna lie. He definitely thought he was the superior superhero, even to Clark Kent, at least at first. I loved him in that, too, so definitely would be a good pick, I do think. And then Dr. Thorne, why am I drawing a huge blank?
I think he's from the beginning, and he's, like, one of the teachers at their school, and then turns out that he's actually a monster.
Okay.
So
that could be another kind of, like, Megan Mullally.
Yeah.
Like, someone significant, kind of a character actor, somebody really fun that doesn't have a lot of time to devote to this, but wants to be involved.
Yeah.
Maybe someone who has a kid. I don't know. Just because their kid reads the books, and
it's like someone
you wouldn't necessarily expect to want to do Percy Jackson, but is like, oh, I have a kid who loves this series, loves these books, so yeah, I want to be in it.
Yeah.
I feel like you can get some really different or, like, unexpected actors that way.
I think that could be cool.
So yeah, that would be a lot of fun. Okay, so we had one other comment from a fantasy fanatic, and they also wanted us to note Apollo, but they also replied with Atlas, Oceanus, and Rachel Elizabeth there, although she might have been cut from this season.
We kind of talked about that last time where, like, obviously they see her at the dam. And so it, like, when it comes back in book four, it's like, oh, she was already there. Like, they've already had an interaction. Would be awesome. Don't think it's necessary, especially if they want to cast somebody the right age and, like, not have them wait basically a whole nother season to actually get to perform that role rather than just, like, this really small bit part.
And we kind of talked about how they could do, like, a person with red hair in the background and kind of hint at Rachel being present at the dam without her actually having to, like, be introduced.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Which I think I would be happy if they just did that, just because logistically I do think it makes sense to kind of hold off a little bit.
And it would be great if she had a hairbrush.
Yeah, if she was, like, brushing her hair in the background, people would go crazy.
They would lose their minds.
Yeah.
It would be so much fun. So yeah, something simple like that as an Easter egg and a nod to, like, we know you guys are kind of expecting this, but we can't give you an introduction here. Mm-hmm. That would be a really fun way to kind of include her. Oceanus, we don't really spend a lot of time with Oceanus. That's just basically when Percy's visiting Tyson and his dad.
Oh.
Like, Oceanus is kind of attacking Poseidon.
Right, because he's on Cronus' side at this point.
Yeah, so, like, Oceanus is distracting Poseidon from being able to join the other gods to unite against Cronus. So I don't know if we're gonna see a lot of Oceanus. They probably will talk about him, but, like, we may not get a whole lot. So that may be, like, a one-off kind of one episode, maybe two episode character.
Yeah.
So yeah, we might not get a big announcement about Oceanus. Maybe just included in the like a bulk announcement at some point when they're talking about all the side characters.
I could see them sort of, like, not even casting him necessarily and just sort of talking about, like, here are all the problems going on right now because we know something's stirring and, like, oh yeah, Oceanus is fighting Poseidon and blah, blah, blah. And, like, I don't necessarily think you have to cast him, especially if it's spending, like, a chunk of money on, like, CGI for him and stuff like that. Like, focus on the more important, like, the core of the story.
Agreed. And, like, in that scene, it's way more important that you get the Percy Poseidon Tyson dynamic.
Right.
Like, kind of understanding how that's what's going on there versus actually, like, seeing Oceanus be present and all that. Okay, so that wraps up casting talk. We'll just kind of move right along here because we also want to talk about upcoming Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents books, and then I have a couple of books by RRP authors that are not RRP releases that I thought might be worth bringing up for you guys so that if you're looking to follow some of them further on in their career, you don't miss anything. So, first of all, as far as upcoming Rick Riordan books, there's one coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
A Court of the Dead is supposed to be released on September 23rd. So set your watches, get your pre-orders in line, make sure you have a ride to Barnes & Noble if you didn't get a chance to pre-order, because I'm sure we will all be diving right in on this.
Yeah. One. And I'm curious. I want to know. So when we're done with the Red Pyramid, do you guys want us to read this book? Because yeah. we could do it where, for the first time, neither one of us have read it yet.
That's true.
Which would be pretty cool. Or do you want us to keep going with the Red Pyramid? Just let us know.
And, I mean, we've also talked about wanting to do something with the show, too. So, like, we could even do one chapter of Court of the Dead until we've done our rewatch and then kind of move on. We've got a lot to talk about. But let us know, please, what you guys would like to hear us talk about. As far as RRP books, the only one I could find any sort of release date for right now is It Lurks in the Night by Sarah Dass. We've talked about this one a few times previously, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time. I think it was supposed to be released in November. It looks like the release date has been pushed back. The only date I could find was January 27th of 2026. So not too much of a pushback, just a couple of months. Mm-hmm. It may have just been a conflict in dates or the printer or editing, who knows.
We were kind of talking before the episode started about how there aren't a lot of Rick Riordan Presents books upcoming right now, at least that we could find. And part of that might be because Rick is so busy, and we do know that he does edit these books. He goes through them, gives his two cents, that sort of thing. It's kind of part of the deal with the Rick Riordan Presents books. So this could be bumped because of his schedule.
Yeah.
And there might not be as many books coming out right now because of what's going on with him. But if you guys have heard anything else, let us know, because we love these kind of books and we're really interested to, like, hopefully they're going to still keep coming out with them.
Yeah.
Because I also wanted to mention Moco Magic was supposed to be a Rick Riordan Presents book, and it's now, that's by Tracy Baptiste, and it's now a Freedom Fire book, which I'm pretty sure is Kwame Mbalia's imprint with Disney, which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of wondering if they're trying to lighten Rick's load a little bit right now.
It very well might be. I mean, especially since he's got not just the Percy Jackson project with Disney, like, they've also talked about so many of his other outstanding projects. Disney's had talks with him about Daughter of the Deep.
Yeah.
And they've had talks with him about other, you know, other things. We know the Netflix Kane Chronicles kind of fell through, but that's not to say he's not talking about it with somebody else, with Disney, with other people. So, you know, Percy Jackson, the series, has been such a success for Disney right now. I would be shocked if they weren't pushing for adaptations of some of his other stuff, too.
Yeah, so I would love that.
My guess is that they are just keeping him very, very busy, and so the imprint is just kind of taking a little bit of a backseat. I hope it's not a permanent backseat, because I know Rick felt really passionately about this mission of, like, helping other authors tell the stories of their cultures and, like, sharing those with the world and sharing these different mythologies that don't always get a chance to be shared. And we've read some really interesting mythologies that I would never have known anything about, and really
discovered some authors that I go and read their other books now because they're so good.
Definitely, yeah. So there's just so much good coming out of this imprint that I really, really hope that this is just kind of a pause while Rick gets his, you know, ducks in a row, and that we will eventually see them kind of pick back up again.
Yeah.
The only other RRP book I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of, the paperback for Sirwa Boateng's third book, The Guide to Saving the World, comes out April 7th of 2026. So there are still some paperbacks floating around that need to be released.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of keep an eye on those and see if there's anything fun regarding those. Other than that, we do have some books by some of the Rick Riordan Presents authors. They're just coming out with other publishing houses. So I wanted to mention The Better to Eat You With.
Love that
by
title.
Taylor K. Mejia. And the cover for this is very creepy. It's like a girl. It's a kind of an illustrated cover, and it's a girl with these, like, creepy yellow eyes, and she's under the water. But, like, her eyes are above the water, so, like, it's very cool. I'm guessing this has to be horror, or at least sci-fi at the very, you know, very at least. I'm sure those that are interested will probably love that.
A middle grade psychological horror.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah. It looks, the cover's gorgeous. It's just definitely got the creepy factor going on, so.
Oh, okay, and that's coming out the same day as Court of the Dead.
It is, yes. Nice. September 23rd. So that is a very new release if you're looking for something a little creepy for October and...
Gonna have to check that out. Season.
The next one on the list is The Swan's Daughter, a possibly doomed love story by Roshni Chokshi. That one comes out January 6th, 2026. We've talked about this one before, mm-hmm. briefly. I'm trying to remember, is this one an adult book? I think it is.
I think so.
Yeah, I think this one is meant to be adult. It's not for middle grade or YA even. So just be aware of that if you are checking it out. Make sure you are age appropriate. We also, this next one did not have a cover, but J.C. Cervantes looks like they have a new series, because there's a book called The Beasts of Winter. It's a Daggers of Ire novel coming out on January 27th of 2026. It's being sold as perfect for fans of Witchlings and Amari and the Night Brothers, so...
Hmm.
Okay, and then moving right along, the last one on my list was Heiress of Nowhere by Stacey Lee, which comes out March 17th. This is basically middle grade, and let's see, it's described as an orphan races to uncover a killer who may have come from the sea when she and her beloved orcas fall under suspicion in this historical gothic mystery. So...
Ooh.
Sounds kind of interesting.
Love a gothic story.
Right? I think that would be way closer to my kind of thing. I can handle a gothic mystery. It's just when it's straight up horror that Kristen's like, maybe not my bag. So yeah, definitely some fun, interesting books coming up for you guys to check out if you were not aware of them. If you hear about an RRP author who's got something new coming out that you're excited about, we would love to hear about it. A lot of them are writing stuff for, like, I came across, like, Sarwat has kind of like an adult, it almost looked like a graphic novel that he's working on or something. And then there was a lot of Star Wars related things were kind of being written, and I didn't want to include all of them because that is quite a bit of stuff. From a couple of them, I think a couple of them were working on Star Wars related books. So if you're into that, definitely check out some of your old RRP authors. They will probably be putting out some of that stuff. That pretty much wraps up the news for today. Hopefully in the future, in a couple weeks when we come back, hopefully we will have maybe like a teaser trailer or something. Because we got one at, maybe we're being greedy. I mean, we got one at Comic-Con, but like...
But that was a teaser. We need a full-blown trailer.
And it's been a couple months, and we're getting closer and closer to December, so come on.
I feel like within the next month or so, I feel like it could happen.
It might be good for beginning of October.
Yeah.
Mid-October. Might be.
Monsters.
And, right?
Yeah, that fits.
Fits right in.
Fits the vibe.
Totally fits the vibe.
All right, let's talk about the Red Pyramid now. We are discussing chapters 35 and 36, and I really like this mini recap thing we've been doing because it helps me kind of get back into the mindset after a couple of weeks away. So the last time we talked about this book, the terrifying goddess Sekhmet was chasing them into a salsa factory and consumed what she thinks is the blood of her enemies until she turns into a cow. How is that even a real sentence? I have no idea. Then Doughboy, now helping to animate a coat, drives a tractor trailer while Carter talks with Zia and realizes, she's hosting the fifth goddess and Seth's wife, Nephthys. Then Amos shows up and ruins everything, basically. And that's kind of where we get started. So chapter 35, men ask for directions and other signs of the apocalypse. Perfect title.
It's a beautiful title.
No notes. I love it.
This is the most Rick of Rick titles we've read in a while. I love it.
And this chapter was pretty quick, so I'm gonna kind of just go through it, fairly quickly here. But after picking up Amos, Sadie gets some sleep, and of course she can't get any restful sleep, so her Ba travels to London. And Isis tells her Set is only the beginning, which we've kind of heard murmurings of this throughout the book, especially the last handful of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And then shows her London in ruins, with Cleopatra's needle opening up like a flower. And I just wanted to know what you thought this meant, because this kind of makes me realize that Cleopatra's Needle is, like, way more important than we first thought.
Yeah. If it's the only thing that kind of survives a devastated London, if this is basically the only thing you can really see on the horizon now, yes, it's obviously way more important than we thought. The fact that it's opening up, like, and it's described like a flower,
mm-hmm.
like, it makes me think of, like, which of these Egyptian goddesses' names are related to flowers? Like, mm-hmm. isn't Isis technically, like, I know there's, like, a lot of flowers that are close to Isis, but I want to say that there's some sort of flower connection there. I do not remember.
I don't remember either.
But, like, it makes me wonder if there's not some sort of clue here that I'm missing because I'm not well-versed in Egyptian flower metaphors.
Yeah.
But
wow, I can't believe that.
It's not my forte, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, this... It definitely points you toward the obelisk, and it's like, there's definitely...
Yeah. And the fact that this is where their mother died, like, I mean, that connection, and the fact that they're kind of coming back to it, and something's potentially coming out of it.
And Isis is saying, like, your mother knew this, and, like, yeah like, Isis is kind of throwing out there this reminder that, yes, this is where your mom died, and, like, she is important to this story, too, even though she's not here, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely brings that back to the forefront. It's something to keep in mind because it definitely is going to be important.
Yeah. Sadie does not want to see this, so Isis changes the vision to a throne room, and there are a bunch of gods that show up, including Anubis. She makes a point to be like, oh boy, and blushes. But the throne remains empty, and Isis tells Sadie they must help Carter become pharaoh. And Sadie rightly complains that he should help her become pharaoh, which I loved. I loved that she included this. But even better than that, Isis says that it's not Sadie's path. And Sadie sort of agrees that she's not really suited to rule over people. And I love that it's not a boy-girl thing. It's not like he's more powerful. Really, their personalities, like, Carter would be good at managing people, organizing things. Sadie would just be... Chaos
agent, yeah.
But not that kind of chaos agent.
Not the bad kind.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Carter is way more... He would be thinking of the greater good for everyone. Like, he'd be trying to do the most good with his reign as possible. Mm-hmm. Whereas Sadie wouldn't want to do bad, but would be a little more chaotic with how she reigns. And so, yes, I do think that Carter is destined for this more than Sadie.
Yeah. So Zia wakes up Sadie, who looks out the windshield and into the storm. So they are right there. Magic isn't working and the GPS is down. So Amos and Carter went into a gas station to ask for directions, hence the title of the chapter. And Zia wants to talk to Sadie while they're alone. Sadie immediately thinks this is about Carter and maybe says a little too much, but... As usual, Zia is all about business. She glosses over the whole Carter thing.
I love the overshare, though.
Yeah.
Sadie is just, like, all about it, and it's like, no, we've got more important things to discuss.
And Sadie's like, can you just forget I said any of that?
Just, just rewind that.
Zia kind of explains, yes, Amos wouldn't do anything to betray them, but Set can be very manipulative. And I found it so interesting that Sadie was defensive of Amos, even though... And, like, she explains it in the chapter. They are family, even though she doesn't know him very well, isn't close to him. It's just kind of this, like, gut reaction to, like, defend somebody who's a part of your family. And I think that's very interesting because Amos hasn't been in this book very much. And I'm very curious if... he survives the end of this book, what their relationship is going to be like going forward.
I mean, he's done some good for them so far, and, you know, he hasn't proven to not be trustworthy. Not that she trusts him, you know, any more than anyone else,
mm-hmm.
but, like, she also kind of is giving him the benefit of the doubt because he is family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do, yeah, I honestly really enjoyed Sadie's defense of Amos, even though... there's a lot to be suspicious of, and there's a lot to worry about because you don't know what's going on. I like that her gut reaction is, you know, he's family.
Yeah. And in that vein, Sadie says Amos can't be possessed, but then her palm starts burning from where she had held the feather of truth. So that means she doesn't really believe it to be true, which I thought was also very interesting, that she does have that doubt in her mind and then was just trying to, like, push it down.
I also love that this opened up for Sadie to kind of wonder what Zia believes to be true that might not actually be true. Like, the concept of, it's not a lie if you believe it, but you might not be telling the truth. Like, you may absolutely believe that it's not possible that Amos is hosting Set, but it is 100% possible that he still is, and Sadie might not be lying, but she's also not telling the actual truth. Like,
right.
It is, there is some gray area to the feather of truth, because as long as Sadie believes 100% for it to be true, she's not lying.
Right.
And so I just loved that kind of breakdown of that, because then Sadie kind of looks at Zia and is thinking about, how is this working for Zia, too? Mm-hmm. Like, is she telling me what she believes to be the truth, but it might not be? And, yeah. I liked that.
This scene was so interesting to me, because Zia is very adamant that Sadie, like, she wants to tell Sadie Seth's name and have her use the book on Amos. But the problem with that is, once she uses the book, that book disappears to another part of the world. So they've got one shot of this whole thing. And immediately I was like, why is she being so pushy about this?
Definitely red flags went up for me too. Yeah,
and I was like, suspicious. And the best part of this, though, is Sadie promises to use it at the right time. And she's very specific to use that particular wording.
Yes.
And then, once again, Amos returns and ruins everything. And still, Zia didn't tell Sadie the secret name.
Yes.
So.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. But they are very close to where they need to go. They are basically on the precipice of entering into Set's domain. And that's where this chapter ends. My favorite line was that whole back and forth between Zia and Sadie, where Sadie says a little too much about how Carter feels about Zia, and Sadie goes, asking if I mind? Very considerate. I must say at first I had my doubts, what with you threatening to kill us and all, but I've decided you're not a bad sort, and Carter's mad about you, so... And it was just, like, very British. I could, like, hear her voice in my mind, and it was just really funny.
It's also very Sadie, like, stream of consciousness. Like,
yeah.
These are the thoughts I have about you possibly dating my brother, even though you haven't really mentioned that that's what we're about to talk about. But I'm assuming that's what we're talking about. And so I'm just going to throw it out there, and then she has to basically say, yeah, okay, let's just move on.
Yeah. What was your favorite line?
Mine was basically the line associating this chapter title, and it says, if two male magicians were desperate enough to stop for directions, we were in dire straits.
Yeah,
and I mean, definitely true.
Fair. My favorite moment was Sadie promising to use the Seth's secret name at the right time, because I thought it was so clever of her to word it that way, and to be aware that, like, to not 100% trust Zia either.
And she also has to be... She's got the feather of truth as well, so she can't lie to Zia about when she's going to use it. She can't promise anything, but she also needs to be, like, truthful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I thought it was very well navigated.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. What was your favorite moment?
I love the struggle between Zia needing Sadie to admit that Amos is being controlled by Set, but Sadie needing to believe that Amos is working for his own ends and is not controlled by Set. And, like, they're both acknowledging that the other might be right, but they each have their own reasons for needing to believe their own opinion of what's going on with Amos. And with Zia's insistence that she use it right now, it throws another red flag, another monkey wrench into the situation, because now I'm questioning why Zia is so insistent. Like, is it just that she believes with her whole heart that if you don't use it now, you're not going to have a chance? Or is it because she wants it wasted? Mm-hmm. Like, for some stupid reason, you know, maybe it has nothing to do with Zia being evil, but, like, wasting this will open up some other opportunity or whatever. Like, it just, there's something else going on here, and I'm anxious to see what it is.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, we do get some answers in the next chapter, which was quite hefty. I was not expecting to have so much going on in this chapter, but we are really getting near to the end of the book right now, which is super exciting. So this is chapter 36. Our family is vaporized, and I would not have guessed in which way they were vaporized at the start of this chapter, but they break into the eye of the storm where everything is calm, and Amos then turns them into storm clouds so that they can sneak closer to the mountain.
Okay, personally, I want to believe that Amos is not set or not evil, but this is the second, like, he's using magic that he did not previously have access to, red flag. I'm just saying.
Yeah, this is, and Zia is upset because this specifically is chaos magic, and a little bit later in the chapter, she says it's not natural, which was hilarious to me because the weather is natural.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming magic laws-wise, this is, you know, different.
Unnatural.
But the thing that bothered me the most was he didn't even tell them what to do. He didn't even say, like, okay, this is how you go forward or whatever. And that just seemed super dangerous to me.
When, like, Sadie describes that you can't really see with human eyes as a storm cloud, like, you just kind of feel your way there.
You
and I'm
sense
like,
what's around you.
Right? Like, some guidance would have been nice.
And she thankfully thinks, oh, I'll just pretend I'm filling myself with helium, and that's how she moves forward. But, like, if she hadn't thought of that, Amos was already zooming away, so...
Yeah.
But, thankfully, they do arrive at the mountain, which is hollowed out and filled with the pyramid, surrounded by demons. The only part not completed is the gold capstone, which is also called a pyramidion.
That was how I thought it was.
Okay, that's kind of a weird word for me to wrap my head around. And it's being held up on ropes by two flying boats, basically, and they're about to set it on top of the pyramid. Sadie suggests blowing everything up, and Amos makes her feel stupid by saying, "That's your plan?" And, you know, he's not exactly my favorite person in this book, but, like, this is a child trying to save the world. The least you could do is be a little bit more empathetic.
And her father.
Yeah.
Like, she's a little bit panicked because we've been talking about this for a while, but now they're literally staring it in the face, and it's like, this feels way bigger than us. How am I supposed to do any of this? Let's just go blow up the boats.
Yeah.
As a first option, it's not a terrible one.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how about you give the young child a chance to think up a better plan or contribute something to the team?
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Like, if you have a contribution.
Only adult in the room? Maybe you should be leading this excursion. Luckily, though, Zia's magic is back, but that also means that Desjardins is no longer being chased by the Pillar of Fire and will arrive soon. And they describe him as like, okay, that's going to be another enemy, like, at our doorstep. Except you would think a normal person would be like, oh, Set really is right there. I'll be on your team now. But with Desjardins, you cannot guarantee that he's going to help you.
You absolutely cannot. Because I kind of had the same thought. Like, he's going to show up, see the, you know, cavern and pyramid and all of that, and he's going to be like, I still need to kill those two
guys. Yeah.
Like, that seems like a really idiotic choice, especially because they're hosting gods that could possibly save your life and or the lives of everyone in North America. So, yeah. You know. But you never know with Desjardins.
Yeah.
You never know.
Really.
Priorities.
So, they do attack the left boat first, and Sadie does actually transform into a kite and back pretty easily, which she notes is kind of a big deal, so love that for her. Zia, unfortunately, gets up to the boat by hanging from the feet of a vulture, and she draws a lot of attention. Not exactly a stealthy mode of transportation.
Yeah.
Amos had taken the form of a fruit bat, which I thought was super interesting because the fruit bats are what attacked them at Desjardins' house. And I'm like, is this supposed to be some sort of connection? Are we supposed to draw any conclusions from this?
Or did he just get inspiration from there?
Maybe?
Yeah, like that's intriguing, yeah.
I'm not really sure. So they land on that boat, they take out the demons, and then Amos turns the other boat into smoke. And then Carter cuts the lines holding the pyramidion. I have to stop and think about it every time. And it falls to the ground and squashes a whole bunch of demons. Mm-hmm. And then, interestingly, Amos sacrifices himself as the kids fly to the pyramid entrance. He yells, "For Brooklyn!" And Carter seals the door behind them, leaving Amos to his fate. So at this point in the story, were you like, oh, he's dead?
No, because if it's not an on-page or on-screen death, I don't trust the lack of a dead body.
Yeah.
I've watched way too many supernatural and science fiction movies and things for that to be something I just buy easily. But at the same time, part of me kind of hoped.
Yeah.
For Sadie's sake, which this sounds backwards, completely backwards, for Sadie's sake, like, I kind of wanted him to just be Amos in this moment, and for him to have died, and for him to have, like, been maimed or something, but survived it, and that after this whole thing is done, like, they'll find him, or, you know, something like that. I was definitely hoping for Amos did a selfless thing, and he proved to be worthy of Sadie's trust.
Right. Yeah, I kept thinking, like, okay, I don't think he's gonna die, but I do kind of think maybe he'll be captured and used as bait later on. Maybe, like, he'll disappear, they'll think he died, and then in book two he'll come back. You know, something along those lines.
I mean, let's face it. Besides Amos and Zia, there's not a whole lot of people left in the story for to be used against them.
Yeah.
So it would make sense for Set to use Amos as a bargaining chip later.
Yeah, 100%. So they leave Amos to his fate. They walk through the tunnels of the pyramid. Carter is very upset because the carvings on the walls aren't normal. This is not a tomb. So they're not showing the afterlife. They're there to basically increase chaos and Set's power because this is a platform for his power. And they make it to the center of this pyramid, which is a throne room surrounded by a moat and questionable red liquid, which actually was going to make my favorite quote and then ended up not using it because I forgot about it. But I really liked this part. It was very funny. And normally, I don't take a whole lot of time to describe, like, exactly what we're looking at, because we're here to discuss, like, the plot points and, you know, our guesses for how things happened. But I just loved the description of this throne room, and I kept thinking about what it would look like on screen, because the floor around the throne is covered in red spells. There's a lot of red, so just get used to that. Red spells invoking chaos. The ceiling is the only opening letting in, you guessed it, blood red light. Along either wall crouched four obsidian statues of the Set animal, all looking toward them. The throne was like a red stalagmite that had formed around Osiris's golden coffin. Just enough stuck out to form a footrest, which to me, diabolical.
Yes.
Like, my goodness, could you be any more disrespectful?
I must also say that this little bit of the coffin sticking out also kind of gives me, like, hubris questions. Mm. Like, will that be Set's undoing? The fact that the coffin is not entirely encased in the stalagmite, will that be the thing that, like, allows them to actually have a chance to free their dad?
Right.
I don't know, but that was something that kind of popped in my head as I'm reading this, and I'm like, I really hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, can you just imagine seeing that on screen?
Oh, I mean,
it would be so creepy and beautiful, so much, like, red and black going on at the same time, like...
And, like, that, like, flat end of a sarcophagus kind of sticking out right at the base, and you know what it is. Like,
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Yeah.
But for better or worse, I mean, it's for worse. We'll find that out in a second. Amos drops down through the ceiling using his coat like a parachute, which I did kind of like that visual, and then closes off the opening after him. He tells them that they need to talk, and then he starts convulsing on the ground, his eyes red, and red steam issuing from his body. The real Amos then tells them to run, so he kind of gets out that last word before he falls unconscious, and then the steam drifts toward the throne, taking the shape of what color?
A red
warrior in fiery armor with an iron staff in his hand and the head of a canine monster. So this obviously is Set.
Yay!
And that's where the chapter ends, which is so mean because I was like, what's going to happen next? Because I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, so Turns out Amos was hosting Set.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. I kind of wanted that twist.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a hot second, I thought Zia was going to be Set and Amos was going to be like Nephthys, which I thought would be really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely had suspicions. I was a little, like, is Zia kind of pulling one over and she's actually Set? Yes. Or is there something else going on that Set isn't in Amos either and that mm-hmm. she's been suspicious of Amos this whole time for no good reason? Or, like, I wanted to believe that Amos was innocent in all of this, although he kind of is. He's being manipulated.
Yeah.
But, like, I wanted to believe that there wasn't something wrong with Amos. So yeah, I am a little bit let down by that, but I just have a feeling there's gonna be a twist that doesn't let me down in about 5 seconds.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I also think Rick had to go in this direction just because Set is Osiris's brother, and if their father is hosting Osiris, Amos had to host Set. I mean, like, like, if you think about the way that Greek stories are told, especially in Rick's books, they follow the same, like, archetypes, characteristics, the same beats every time, just in a slightly different, more modern way. So, like, it had to be Amos. But mm-hmm. you're right. I think maybe there will be another twist coming. I don't know if that twist is going to be like, oh, Set really isn't the bad guy, Apophis is, or if it'll be something else entirely.
Yeah.
But that wraps up this chapter. Very excited to get to the next one. But favorite lines, I also did really like this line. I got so angry, a flash of lightning crackled inside me.
Like, it did make me think, like, if you were a storm cloud, like, that's a cool idea of, like, you're a storm cloud and you get angry and suddenly there's just, like, lightning firing around in your stomach and, like, because you're a storm cloud, it looks cool. Like, I don't know. It was a very visual thing for me. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. And since you didn't choose this line as your favorite, I just want to give a shout out to, it was about the size of a tennis court, but around the edges, the floor dropped off into a deep trench like a moat. Far, far below, red liquid bubbled. Blood? Lava? Evil ketchup? None of the possibilities were good.
I choose evil ketchup.
I mean, that would be so sad. I like ketchup.
I know.
But I guess blood or lava? Yeah, I'm going to take the ketchup.
Yeah.
You're right.
And it would just be interesting. I want to know what evil ketchup is. Is right? it spicy?
Ooh.
Is that evil?
I would be into that.
How does ketchup become evil?
I don't know.
Thoughts?
Good question. Let us know.
Something to think about.
What was your favorite line?
Mine was the last line of the chapter from Set, and he says, oh dear, I suppose Zia gets to say, I told you so.
I mean, that's a good last line.
It's such a good line. It's a fantastic closing line. It's a classic Rick, you know, villain shows up and is like, it's exactly what they told you. Yeah. You should have listened to someone. Yeah. It's all your fault.
Yeah. Villain, snarky villain. Rick does it well.
Definitely.
My favorite moment, I already said, was the description of the throne room. I just thought it was really beautiful and creepy at the same time and just so visual. I could picture every inch of this throne room.
Well, and, like, Sadie talking about the carvings getting, like, more and more grotesque as they got closer. And, like, it wasn't just, like, you know, chaos, but it was, like, evil. Like, things that were really gross and just, I thought it was interesting that that's the iconography that, like, describes chaos, that brings chaos, that foments chaos.
Yeah, and I think also important to note, which I didn't before, is as she gets closer to the throne room, she feels more and more queasy, and Carter jumps over the moat to where the throne is very easily, or so it appears, and yet when she does it, she feels even worse. So I'm wondering, okay, what else is going on here?
Yeah, is Carter feeling queasy at all, or is this like a Sadie only thing?
Right.
And Carter's not feeling the effects of it. Mm-hmm. How is he protected? What is going on with Horus? Like, you know, it's got to be a Horus thing if that's the case. And yeah, definitely makes you intrigued to see what exactly is going on in Carter's head. We have been in Sadie's head for a minute here, so it's like, I'm ready to kind of make the switch and see what's going on for Carter.
Interesting. Yeah. What was your favorite moment?
Them getting to be clouds, as much as like Amos didn't really give him a choice. It was just like, here we go, cloud time. I loved the thought of, like, a person becoming a cloud and, like, still having the human ability to think.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, if I picture myself breathing in helium, like, that'll push me forward, and if I swirl myself like a tornado, almost, it will allow me to move faster. Like, Sadie kind of talks through all of this stuff in her head, and I just thought it's like, a fascinating way to, like, travel. Mm-hmm. Like, you become a storm cloud, and then you just have this ability to, you know, get through. I don't know. I loved the idea of it, as much as it was, like, a very short-lived thing, and it was honestly probably a bad choice for them, since it's kind of chaos magic
right.
at work. I still just loved the idea of them becoming storm clouds.
Yeah.
It's just a very cool concept.
It was.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, and we appreciate them so very much. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for content you want to hear from us in the future. We do have one bit of feedback, and I'm going to toss it to Karen for this, because someone is going to be going to a tour stop.
Yes, yeah, so I asked if anybody was going to any of the tour stops for
Court of the Dead.
For Court of the Dead, because we won't be going, and I usually do try to go to his tour stops, but honestly, it's too much for me right now, so I'm not going to be able to go to any, but they are always fantastic. And longtime listener of us on other podcasts, DW Toodles, said that he is going to the tour stop in Denver, which sounds super fun. Hope you have a great time.
Right.
Let us know all the secrets, because Rick usually tells some secrets.
Yes.
And I need to know what they are.
Yes. So, report back.
Yes. Looking forward to
since
that.
Since we can't go this time, yes, we would love to be in on the secrets. For yeah. Sure. Okay. So, next time, we will be talking about the Red Pyramid, chapters 37 and 38, probably somewhere around October 1st for that episode, so be on the lookout. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.